There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there is this thing?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Hi, welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting not live, but still from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd. Today we broadcast from the Jiuzhaige, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations.
Hi, my name is Maya Ibbotson, and this week Amy and I are not able to record together, unfortunately. This week we're going to feature an interview with Mikhail Malik, who is a representative of the Junior Peacemakers chapter here at McGill. I actually recorded this interview 2 weeks ago, but due to technical difficulties, we weren't able to air it last week, but we're going to do it now. So a few weeks ago, the Junior Peacemakers chapter, which Mikhail is representative of here at McGill, organized a virtual fundraising march. So that was lasting from the 23rd through to the 31st, and that raised both awareness and funds that will go towards organizations associated with the hashtag Idle No More movement and the hashtag Honor the Treaties movement. Prior to that, we will have a small feature that aims to introduce and update folks on both the aforementioned movements, along with the racist protests against Mi'kmaq Fishers. We also want to issue a content warning as the interview discusses issues resulting from the legacy of settler colonialism. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be right back.
Dominic Fike with Vampire. Now for our weekly headline roundup. On top of Mi'kmaq fishery rights being violated and fishers being harassed, First Nation fishers in BC have been fighting a long sieve to save their salmon, which, as according to APTN News, quote, are at risk of decimation due to a number of factors, the biggest of which being salmon farms. Biologist and researcher Alexandra Morton calls the open water fish farms, basically pens in the oceans, feedlots that are infected with disease that wild salmon can catch as they pass by them, resulting in illness and death, unquote. However, the DFO argues that these farms do not pose a significant risk. Bob Chamberlain, who is a fisher, has been fighting against these fish farms for years. He spoke with APTN News, saying, quote, I would say the problem with the DFO is that the environment is one that is hell-bent on supporting a fish farms. Here we are 8 years later, and we've had two successive runs that are even lower than what triggered the Cohen Commission examination, and we still have the department perpetuating the support for fish farms, creating science that supports and moves completely away and absolutely abandons the precautionary principle in terms of their primary responsibility to the environments and wild fisheries, unquote. In Manitoba, Métis and First Nations struggle with the new provincial hunting rules. These rules attack the well-established moose harvesting rights while disguising themselves as an effort of conservation. Will Gooden of the Manitoba Métis Federation issued a statement to APTN News saying, quote, the province wanted to make sure their base of support, the Conservative Party, was able to hunt at the same time as Indigenous harvesters, which we know is not what the Supreme Court says is to happen. The Constitution says the opposite. Unquote. Southern Chiefs Organization Grade Chief Jerry Daniels was quoted saying, it's just another example of trying to suppress our rights and suppress our ability to live out our cultural way of life. If the province wants to keep intimidating our people out on the land, we're going to stand with our people and look to the federal government to intervene. We never agreed for provinces to have jurisdiction over us. Unquote.
On Thursday, October 29th, Sheffield Matthews was shot dead by police in Montreal. At around 6 a.m., the 41-year-old black man was shot in the NDG neighborhood after responding to a 911 call, which disclosed that Matthews was in crisis and wielding a knife. When officers drove up, according to the police watchdog agency, they stepped out of their vehicle and ended up shooting him. The shooting is being investigated by Quebec's BEI and the coroner's office. There have been some questions, of course, about the BEI's neutrality, given the lack of BIPOC representation. Sue Montgomery, who is the mayor of the NDG borough, condemned the shooting in a Facebook post, where she said, quote, we have a sad and tragic history of police violence against black men. The senseless killing of people of color needs to end. Systemic racism is undeniable. It is present in the Montreal Police Service and in all facets of our society, unquote. About 200 people gathered at Trenholme Park on Saturday afternoon demanding police forces be defunded in the wake of Sheffield Matthews' shooting, with more resources as well being allocated to community groups that can respond to mental health crises. The protest was followed by a placing of flowers at the spot where Matthews was fatally shot by the police on Côte Saint-Luc Road near West Hill Avenue. And this protest was organized by Black Lives Matter Montreal and the Defund the Police Coalition.
According to the McGill Daily, quote, in light of student activism on campus, some Canadian universities have begun drafting action plans, forming committees, and re-examining their violent histories. However, many students, especially Black and Indigenous students and students of color, remain frustrated. In response, many are pushing their schools even harder to improve their policies and stand up for their racialized students. At McGill, this momentum is coming to a head in the School of Social Work, where students are becoming increasingly dissatisfied with what they feel are slow, unresponsive bureaucratic systems. Cody Martin, a U2 social work student from Litsikouj, apologies if that pronunciation is off. I had trouble finding a correct pronunciation online. A Mi'kmaq community on the Gaspé Peninsula is among those who have been pressuring the school to act in solidarity with Indigenous communities across Canada. Martin, who is also part of the race caucus at the School of Social Work, has reached out repeatedly to ask the school for concrete solidarity action, beginning with a letter affirming its support for Indigenous communities. Throughout his time in social work, Martin told the Daily, conversations around quote-unquote allyship have been constant. He explained, however, that these conversations have seldom led to real change. Quote, it's kind of time to put those words into action, Martin said. and not just to have these 5-minute discussions in the classroom and walk away from it, unquote. The School of Social Work has a history fraught with colonial exploitation to reckon with, according to Martin, setting its reliance on Indigenous communities for research purposes without effectively giving back to those communities. He's quoted saying, a lot of Indigenous communities are tired of being dissected at an academic level. Unquote. Martin and others are finding land acknowledgements and brief statements in social work not enough. He says, if you don't want to be a part of the bigger picture, you need to stop using terminology like decolonizing, reconciliation, you know? Unquote.
This past Monday, Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, and the German biotechnology company BioNTech announced that their vaccine candidate against COVID-19 has shown extremely promising results in the phase 3 clinical trials. So for this company, what happened is that during the phase 3 clinical trial, which started on July 27th, this is the final human trial step before regulatory approval. The first two studies are mainly focused on safety, dosing, and lab indicators, whereas phase 3 trials answers whether the vaccine will actually protect from disease. And the studies show since that this Pfizer candidate may be up to 90% effective against preventing the coronavirus. It looked at 94 infections recorded so far during the trial, and each person got 2 shots, dummy shot versus placebo, and the results look really good. So Canada announced on August 5th that it had pre-ordered this vaccine. It later specified that it had reserved approximately 20 million doses with the option to purchase more. And because 2 doses of this vaccine are required, Canada would initially have to vaccinate 10 million people if it is approved by the FDA.
That concludes our weekly headline roundup. Next up, we're playing some tops, and then we have our interview with Mikhail Malik from the Junior Peacemakers chapter here at McGill.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. That was the Susan Kraft remix of Colder and Closer by Tops. Again, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. So now it's time for our interview with Mikhail, who is a representative of the Junior Peacemakers chapter at McGill. I spoke with Mikhail about Junior Peacemakers, the organization of, and the overall success of the virtual fundraiser. And lastly, we discussed anti-Indigenous racism, along with the movements that promote Indigenous sovereignty and protests of colonial powers and privileges. Prior to our segment, we want to issue a content warning as the interview discusses issues resulting from the legacy of settler colonialism. So does Amy's little segment beforehand, but we hope you enjoy.
So, before we begin our interview with Mikhail, I first want to provide a brief overview of the movements in which Maya will be discussing. First, I want to start with Idle No More. Idle No More is a movement that began in 2012. Initially, Idle No More was a protest against the introduction of Bill C-45 from Harper's Conservative government at the time. According to the Canadian Encyclopedia, quote, formerly known as the Jobs and Growth Act, this omnibus legislation affected over 60 acts, including the Indian Act, Navigable Waters Protection Act, and Environmental Assessment Act. Idle No More activists argued that the Act's changes diminished the rights and authority of Indigenous communities while making it easier for governments and businesses to push through projects without strict environmental assessment. The movement quickly gained supporters from across Canada and abroad and grew to encompass environmental concerns and Indigenous rights. Unquote. Idle No More was formed by Jessica Gordon, Sylvia McAdam, Sheila McLean, and Nina Wilson in November of 2012. The group of women began the movement in Saskatchewan. Idle No More started through this group of women just exchanging emails, which eventually led to them establishing a Facebook page, which is now named after the very famous movement. Quickly, the name and its message spread across Canada as a means to, quote, both safeguard the environment and respect Indigenous sovereignty, unquote. In its early days, Idle No More's greatest opposition was Bill C-45. Activists believe this bill would allow for the government, along with big businesses, to develop projects such as pipelines without thorough and strict environmental assessments or regulations, thus entrenching on First Nations authority along with their treaty rights. Chief Teresa of Attawapiskat First Nation became associated with the movement when she partook in a liquid fast from the 11th of December in 2012 to the 24th of January of 2013. This fast represented a protest against the, quote, perceived failure of the federal government to honor treaty rights and obligations. Despite common interest, however, Spence was not a spokesperson for Idle No More, unquote. Media coverage of Idle No More somewhat declined after January of 2013 and the meeting that took place between PM Harper and delegates from the Assembly of First Nations. However, Idle No More continues to advocate for the sovereignty and land rights of Indigenous people. Quote, in March of 2013, Idle No More formed an alliance with Defenders of the Land, a network of activists that has been involved in Indigenous land right issues since 2008. As a part of this alliance, Idle No More agreed to support nonviolent direct action, i.e. blockades. The two organizations issued a joint declaration that called on the federal, provincial, and territorial governments to do the following. 1. Repeal provisions of the Job and Growth Act, otherwise known as Bill C-45, that infringed on Indigenous and treaty rights and environmental protections. 2. Improve and deepen democracy by implementing proportional representation and ensuring consultation on legislation regarding collective rights and environmental protections. 3. Fully implement the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, including the right of Indigenous peoples to reject development on their territory. 4. End the government policy of extinguishing Aboriginal title, instead affirming Aboriginal title and rights per Section 35 of the Constitution and as recommended by the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples. 5. Honor historic treaties. And 6. Hold a national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women. Unquote. The next movement I want to talk about is the Honor the Treaties movement, also known as hashtag Honor the Treaties. which is in of itself self-explanatory, hence the title. However, the movement has been widely discussed in relation to what is currently going on in Nova Scotia with Mi'kmaq fishers. Indigenous and non-Indigenous activists, along with land defenders across Canada, are demanding that the treaty rights in regards to fishing and selling in Nova Scotia for Mi'kmaq peoples is respected. We discussed this in length 2 weeks ago about the history of the Mi'kmaq peoples and the legislative history regarding their treaties. Overall, it is important to emphasize that both these movements represent a major crisis in Canada, which is environmental racism, especially linked to indigeneity and treaty rights. We continuously see the Canadian government, on any level, disrespecting, violating, and completely neglecting the existence and the validity of these historical legislative pieces that are treaty rights. We must place a heavy, heavy emphasis on the relationship between land defenders, Indigenous treaties, and climate change, as well as protecting our environment. In doing so, we have a better chance of not only understanding what we're up against when it comes to environmental violation, but also a better way to approach the conversation in general. So now that I've provided that short but informative overview, let us move on to our interview portion of the show. Once again, we spoke with Mikhail, who is a representative from Junior Peacemakers from the McGill chapter. Junior Peacemakers, which started in 2001, advocates for peace, education, and humanity through valuing themselves as global citizens. 2 weeks ago, they held a virtual fundraising event. The funds went to the Native Women's Shelter. So now let's hear more about it from Mikhail himself.
Hi, Mikhail.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? So for all the listeners, this is Mikhail. He's a good friend of mine and a friend of the show. I have a few questions for you, and we're going to talk about
what... Thank you for having me.
Of course. So first, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself and like what you're doing at McGill as a student and how you got involved in the Junior Peacemakers at McGill?
Absolutely. So I'm Mikhail. I'm a poli-sci major. I'm minoring in World Islamic and Middle East Studies. And a good friend of mine, Claire Maybank, who actually was the director of Junior Peacemakers last year, she went to my high school, and her and I had many discussions during high school and also in university about Indigenous rights in Canada specifically, and also just regarding like self-determination movements and just causes that exist all over the world. And she introduced me to Junior Peacemakers, and kind of her and I started this Indigenous rights branch that I'll talk about probably later on. But I think what I study and where I'm from, I'm an immigrant, I'm a recent citizen, all of those factors influenced why I'm interested in self-determination rights causes and where it comes to discrimination and racial justice.
Right. So I know that Junior Peacemakers is kind of concerned with that, but could you tell us a bit more about what the organization at McGill is doing and what your position there is?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way Junior Peacemaker is organized this year is that there's two different branches. There's the awareness branch, which focuses on a wide variety of causes, ranging from Indigenous rights to all others as well. But the cause that I'm working in is the Indigenous cause branch. And myself, along with Maya Astrologia, we are the change coordinators. And our role is really to spearhead events, fundraisers, speaker series. There's much more to come. We've just kind of started our first project. But just kind of spearheading ideas and causes within the student body that can really help to mobilize them in a way that can really bring about solidarity with those causes.
Right. So I know on our last episode, actually, Amy and I talked about Idle No More. And on your Instagram, you've been advertising the Idle No More virtual fundraising march, which happened last week. And again, we talked about it a bit, but do you want to explain to us what the virtual fundraising march's causes was and like how it turned out?
Yeah, absolutely. So Idle No More, and I'm sure as you and Amy discussed, is a very symbolic movement because it's one of the first ones that began on social media in regards to the Indigenous people. And it began in 2012 and really was able to mobilize a wide variety of the Canadian people from all different races and different generations with the collective effort of standing in solidarity with Indigenous rights. So in regards to how we did it, we did it it through those hashtags, so I don't know more and honor the treaties. And the reason we did it virtually was, of course, because of government restrictions due to COVID. But we did it through the Eventbrite, and we've sold almost now 65 tickets and raised just under $700. And the virtual march is actually continuing until October 31st. So tomorrow is the last day. So people are still able to donate, and the money is going towards the Native Women's Shelter. And we chose that organization because of the recent tragedy with Joycey Chaekwon, who was faced discrimination and just derogatory racial violence in our public healthcare system in Montreal.
Right. I think that we had a representative from the Native Women's Shelter on the show before, and we touched on that. I think that I personally thought it was super smart of you guys to use social media to spread awareness because obviously,
thank you.
No, of course, because especially because you're targeting young people, you're targeting students. I didn't actually know about that government caveat, but do you think that social media in general was more impactful than going about it a different way?
Well, I think social media is very unique when it comes to causes, especially I think it depends on the context, because Indigenous rights is a very difficult movement when it comes to mobilizing people from all different parts of the Canadian electorate, let's just say, because social media was used in the I Don't Know More movement in 2012 as a way of bridging the gaps that existed between Indigenous groups within themselves. So it allowed them to create new bonds and new relationships within Indigenous communities, while also bringing in allies from outside of Indigenous groups and non-Indigenous groups to kind of form that collective identity that didn't exist before. So social media kind of allows us to, go to use the structures outside the state to kind of form new bonds and relationships that kind of aren't able to be created in like formal structures of mobilization.
So I know that besides social media, you talked to City News, right, about the virtual march a few days ago, which is amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was huge for us.
Yeah. So what aspects of the march did you discuss with them?
So the City News interview was kind of focused on how we were able to organize this through the pandemic, and then also was able to mobilize parts of the student body in solidarity with this cause. And we talked about how you can register and where the money is going to. And then we also talked about how certain current events, such as I'm sure you've discussed on your radio channel, with what's happening with the fishing crisis and what's also happening with the recent killing of the murder of Joycey Chaekwon. Those were all the things that we talked about, and we really wanted to highlight how that systemic racism, although we may not notice it to be as visible because there is such a small population of Indigenous people living in this country, that it is still so profound for the Indigenous community. And we also kind of wanted to discuss how McGill and McGill students specifically, we see the legacies of the residential school system and the 60 scoop on our street in our ghetto. So I think that way we were more exposed to that visibility, and we wanted to kind of put that out there towards City News and to get as many people to realize that this is a just cause that they have benefit in taking part in.
So just moving away, I'm going to come back to the topic, but I know that the Junior Peacemakers doesn't just focus on Indigenous race. I mean, obviously you said before you're in charge of the branch, but also other social issues as a whole. So how else does the organization, mobilize young people at McGill or elsewhere to care about these kind of causes?
So the Junior Peacemakers, actually what its basic function beginning when it started was to nurture activism amongst children.
Right.
So there's an entire group of people, part of Junior Peacemakers, who actually goes to elementary schools and schools all over Montreal and discusses those ideas of global citizenship and why we must be responsible and accountable to many of the issues facing our global community. So that's one part. And then the other part that we focused on is an educational function, which is a lot of what the awareness branch, along with the Indigenous branch, is trying to move forward this year, which is to create create speaker series, to create engagement where the McGill student body can directly benefit from learning about causes where Canada actually is directly involved in. And we're focusing, like there is a big focus on the Indigenous rights cause, but there's a larger focus on self-determination and the idea that there are so many protracted conflicts all over this world that are largely to do with identity and that identity not being affirmed, and not being affirmed due to legacies such as settler colonialism, due to legacies of contemporary like settler colonialism and modern warfare. So there's a lot of what we want to like talk about. There's a lot of what we want to put out into the community, and that will be coming in the next few months. We focused on, especially amongst the change branch, we're focusing on 1 to 2 issues every month. The first project was much more of an awareness one, to let us know, to let the McGill community know who the change coordinators are, who junior peacemakers are, and why we chose the Indigenous cause. Moving forward, we're going to have many, many different ideas and initiatives on a wide array of issues based on having an educational function, and then also a way to entice people to coordinate and cooperate with us in order to mobilize the student body in solidarity for that just cause.
Right. Yeah, I think that Junior Peacemakers is doing a great job. But besides the organization, obviously, like, there's a bunch of different chapters at different schools. But how do you think that university student bodies, like, at different schools can show solidarity with Indigenous struggles, like the Mi'kmaq fishing crisis and what you talked about, the recent tragedy of Joyce Etchikon's death?
Yes. Yeah, so what our objective really is to kind of create this new consciousness within the youth of Canada, because there's a serious gap, I think, between the generation that's currently in power and then the generation that is going to become in power in the next 10 to 20 to 30 years.
For sure.
So we want to help bridge that conscious gap and create that collective identity based on those inherent things that we believe to be true, like the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, those fundamental rights that we have as Canadians been a signatory of, we want to help upheld. And I think that the only way for us to kind of have this effect on university students across Canada is to make these issues more visible. And the only way to make it more visible in our view is through social media, and it's through forming relationships between organizations like JRP and other organizations at different schools. We were able to do that at Queen's this year, where there was an organization at Queen's that actually and ended up promoting our cause at the university. So we're looking forward to those future engagements, and we're open to it. So, for example, we are in contact with the Indigenous Affairs unit at U of T as well. So there are many, many future initiatives that will require collaboration with different universities. And I think the main thing is to show that our power as a student body is greater than we imagine. If you look at Thailand, if you look at countries all over the world, real change happens at universities. Real change happens when university students are actually occupying a space and saying that we are demanding change within our government and federal government as well. So I think that's a huge thing, is letting the youth know and letting students at universities know the power that they have and the space that they occupy represents real change.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously Junior Peacemakers is for sure doing its part with the virtual walk and everything, but addressing the white elephant in the room, that being McGill, what do you think that McGill is doing in terms of acknowledging these crises, what more do you think that they could do? What are your opinions on that?
Well, actually, that's quite interesting, because yesterday I was looking at McGill's Indigenous Affairs website, and they actually do put out a substantial amount of information in regards with the Truth and Reconciliation Committee's recommendations and many, many other initiatives. So it is accessible if you look at McGill's website under the Indigenous branch. But the way JRP sees McGill is, McGill is just an example of another formal institution. You know, we're looking at McGill as another kind of extension of the state, and that may be a radical view to some, but I think that's kind of the reality.
Yeah.
So the way our movement kind of sees this is that we are in need of the students. you know, because McGill provides us with this diverse student body with unique perspectives. So it is on us to mobilize together, and it is on us to show we care. McGill has already helped us in creating a space where we come together and share our ideas. So the more we do that, as long as we are able to gain support in the sense of space for mobilization and execution of our projects, I think as an organization, we are content. And being able to say that we are a, you know, university sanctioned group, we are also able to say that, you know what, we can really create change even within those formal institutions by doing direct action outside of it. And that direct action is done through social media, done through fundraising. So, and with collaboration with local organizations. So the way I see McGill and the way I see McGill's role in this is that as long as we don't see repression from the university and our activities post-corona time, mm-hmm. post-COVID time, because the way Junior Peacemaker sees it is that we want to occupy space within McGill to show that the university students at the school not only stand with Indigenous rights, but stand with self-determination movements where identities are being not affirmed and their dignity has been disenfranchised. We will stand with those just causes.
Right. I think, yeah, I know that there are a lot of Indigenous groups on campus. Are the Junior Peacemakers affiliated with any?
So, yeah, great question, actually. So I'm sure you're aware of the other organization that's a, you know, grassroots mm-hmm. organization called Meals for Milton Park.
Yeah.
And we are in early preliminary discussions with them on some kind of partnership based on fundraising efforts. Maybe some percentage of that money would be going towards their grassroots efforts to actually provide, you know, basic needs for the homeless populations living in our localities. So we really want to be kind of the institution that not only makes fundraising efforts to other organizations like Meals for Milton Park and the Native Women's Shelter, but we want to also add the political element to it and the conflict element to it and the worldly vision element to it that other grassroots non-governmental organizations focus on. So that's, if that didn't answer your question, I can clarify later.
No, for sure. I think that everything you guys are doing is great. I think it's great that you're also getting involved with other groups on campus. You're doing great work.
We're also looking to get involved with SMU, because SMU has an Indigenous Affairs sector, and we've reached out to them, and we're hoping for greater collaboration when it comes to our speaker series, because there's a bunch of Indigenous activists locally who we really want to give a platform for to the student body to be able to hear their ideas and perspectives and understand it as a way of forming a new relationship with the Indigenous people, mm-hmm. you know, based on mutual respect.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I think everything you guys are doing are great. Thank you for talking about it with us today. I think I'm going to wrap it up right now. But for those listening who are interested in what you're doing, how could people get involved with your organization and help out the cause?
They can check out our Instagram, jr.peacemakers. They can check out our Facebook, and they can check out the link in our bio to donate. It's still ongoing till the 31st, mm-hmm. and we're open to all ideas. So just send us a message, and you can definitely join the team.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today, Mikhail.
Thank you so much, Maya.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. Thanks for listening to our segment. We hope everyone found it informative. And thanks once again to Mikhail for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with us. We're going to play a quick song and then wrap up the show after. So stay tuned.
Now, usually I put something on TV so we know. options clearly in Hollywood laying on the screen. You just need a better life than this. You need something I can never give. Fake water all across the road. It's gone, now the night is come. But sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June. E-waves been faking me out. Can't make you happier now. You can't fight it, you can't breathe. You say something so loving, but now I gotta let you go.
I just wish that I could give you that bad look that's perfectly unsaid. Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June. He always been faking me out. He always been faking me out.
Welcome back. That was Glass Animals with Heat Waves, followed by Winona Forever with Gazing. Again, you're listening to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. Thanks for tuning in this week. Much appreciated, as always. Come back next week if you like what you hear. Tune in. We're live at 5 for yet another show. Thanks once again to Mikhail Malik. We will link all the resources he mentioned and we mentioned in our show to our Twitter and our Instagram. Just search for Unfit to Print. So we will see you all next week. Playing us out, we have Goodbye Horses by Q Lazarus, Little Silence of the Lambs reference, followed by Eurythmics with Sweet Dreams.
Beatrice Dear, Ingisimi Yanga, 1997.